I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Indiana's often unmentioned epidemic, teen sexual assaults. Indiana ranks second in the nation in that disturbing category. 17.3% of girls in Indiana are raped or sexually assaulted before they graduate from high school. We're going to talk about solutions with State Representative Christina Hale, a Democrat from Indianapolis, Anita Carpenter of the Indiana Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and Malia Crosby, a victim who now counsels victims. Please join the conversation. Our phone number is 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org, Twitter is WFYI, and Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by your membership and by Apparatus IT Security, identifying network vulnerabilities to help keep companies secure. More information on security assessments for businesses at apparatus.net. And by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th State University. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the somber subject of teen sexual assault today on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please call us at 1-866-476-3881. Our email is nolimitswfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI, and Facebook is No Limits WFYI. And I will say, if you do call in and you want to share your story, you have an experience, I want to assure you, you will be treated with dignity and with sensitivity, and we will take steps to protect your privacy. I'd like to welcome a great group of guests to the show today, starting with Representative Christina Hale, a Democrat from Indianapolis. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for bringing attention to this issue.
It's good to have you here, and it's sort of what we do here. Anita Carpenter, who is the CEO of the Indiana Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Anita, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. It's good to have you here. And Malia Crosby, who is a victim and also now counsels victims. Malia, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly. Well, I want to start, at some point, give Malia a chance to share her story and her experience, because I think that's important. But to help people get an idea, I mean, they hear that 17.3%, and people can get lost in the numbers. What we're really saying here is that slightly more than one in six young women in Indiana is raped or sexually assaulted by the time she reaches the age of 18. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why is that? I mean, why is Indiana? We're number two in the nation, right, in that dubious category. What factors have produced something that's pretty disturbing? I'll start with you, Representative Hale.
That's the billion-dollar question, and thank you for asking it. The sad fact is that's a number in aggregate. We don't know why. We're second only to the state of Wyoming, with which Indiana has
nothing in common.
Nothing in common. Our peer states, our neighboring states, are much closer to the national average, which is pretty outrageous in and of itself at 10.5%. So,
but we're almost twice as many as
twice the national average. When we received this study from the Centers for Disease Control, we learned that we really have very little data. And in fact, the same study went out regarding boys in Indiana as well. That number comes back at 4.5%. But since that's such an extremely drastically underreported group, or grouper that just doesn't report, we realized we're data poor. We don't know why. And in fact, the gentleman that conducted the study said finding this out was like a punch in the gut. Mm-hmm. We don't have the information. That's the critical first step.
Anita, obviously, you work in this area. What do you think? Why is Indiana sort of the poster child for bad behavior here?
Well, you know, and I don't know that I guess I would put Indiana in that category. I think that we have a significant problem, mm-hmm. and I'm really grateful that we're bringing a lot of attention to it. But as Representative Hale said, you know, we just really don't know the problems that we have and the numbers that we have. Rape is one of the most underreported crimes, mm-hmm. and sexual violence across the myriad of types of sexual violence. We just don't have a good handle on how many. But we do know that there are some contributing risk factors related to poverty and gender inequality and problematic areas within our society, systemic issues that contribute to sexual violence.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? I mean, when you talk about it, you listed some factors, poverty, gender inequality, all of that. Can you break down for people who are listening how those things might lead to this high incidence of sexual assaults?
Well, we've got some correlations in our risk factors, and when we take a deeper look at those and we look at the dynamics around poverty and what places families in poverty situations, loss of job, you know, family status situations, homelessness, those kind of factors contribute to the dynamics surrounding family violence and interpersonal violence. A lot of these circumstances are acquaintance relationship type violence situations, and people in those environments can find themselves with low self-esteem, repeating cycles of violence that are within patterns of their families, and that's where we see perpetuations. A lot of this, though, too, I think we have to factor in, contributes to the fact that we aren't addressing perpetration effectively. We aren't reducing perpetration. We've spent a whole lot of time on addressing victimization, and we are just now starting to scratch the surface on perpetration.
When you talk about perpetration, what do you mean? The person who commits the crime?
Right, right. And the education around that individual trying to reach them before they perpetrate a crime. Mm-hmm. So those risk factors are also there for victimization and perpetration, and we've spent a whole lot of time helping victims and working with victims, but we have really just started scratching the surface on trying to reduce perpetration.
Malia, when Anita was talking about the effects of this, I saw you nodding your head almost as if it were a reflex here. You've been down this road.
Yes.
Could you share as much of that as you feel comfortable doing so with what happened to you?
Sure. I was a junior in high school, and my assault happened by a friend in high school. We were at a lake parked, and I was okay with everything that was happening, and he asked me to get in the back seat of the car. I remember I was okay with it, and then I remember screaming and asking him to stop, and he did not stop. At that moment, that's when it crossed the line and he assaulted me.
Did you report it, or?
I did not report it. My story is not in isolation. So many things were confirmed that I blamed myself. The messages that you get from others. I went to the doctor, and I remember her making the comment that there was some medical issues with bruising and tearing, but she never continued to ask any questions. So again, it just confirmed that all the things that I was putting on myself were true.
Did you share it with your parents or with friends or family members? Or, I mean, as I'm listening to you, it sounds like an incredibly isolating experience.
It very much was. I had written in my diary about the assault, and a couple days later, my mom found the letter. She never really asked any questions. So again, confirming that I put myself in that position, I asked for it. All of those things that I was already thinking, the lack of support kind of confirmed those for me.
We are talking about teen sexual assault here on No Limits. To join the conversation, give us a buzz at 1-866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi, and Twitter is WFYI. Well, Christina, I know that you're in your role as a state representative, you're trying to take a closer look at this issue right now, and you have a bill that's somewhere lodged in the legislative process. Could you talk a little bit about what that bill does and where it is right now?
I sure can. My bill aims to study the issue from the perspective of social science. When we're talking about rape and sexual assault, those are big words with big definitions, and it includes everything from a date rape situation, as was just described, to child seduction, to incest, all kinds of things, and all kinds of causalities. And the purpose is really twofold. One is we need to drive up reporting because we want to connect victims with services they need once a crime has occurred. But secondly, it's prevention. We have to drive those numbers down, but we can't really put together effective programming that's targeted geographically and demographically, et cetera, until we understand the problem. So I worked with Dr. John Parrish Sproul, who founded the IU School of Global Public Health, IUPUI School of Global Public Health, to design a study, something that we believe could, where Indiana could take leadership and really properly, thoroughly study this issue so we can most effectively and efficiently address all the issues as they come up. Now, this bill was endorsed by the Criminal Code Summer Study Committee, and I'm waiting now. It's most likely that it will be heard next week, and it will become part of another bill. And I'm really happy to report that a lot of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are supporting this and this effort, and people are really collaborating now to do something for Indiana's children. Public safety is job number one, and we know that our children in Indiana aren't safe from violent sexual assault, and that's just not good enough.
And it sounds like the bill then primarily is about information gathering at this stage, making sure that you know the scope of the problem before we take any other steps to address it, right?
Exactly. As step one, we want to be good stewards of tax dollars, and we also want to be effective and drive effective policy. That can't happen until we understand the problem. And that's what we aim to do, post haste, with urgency.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener, Anita, who wanted a little more elaboration on how poverty affects these rates.
Sure. So when we look at the dynamics surrounding poverty and we talk about economic status, we're talking about families who are just inherently vulnerable by status in their position. They may have blended families or single parent households, maybe latchkey kids. There may be prior history of abuse in the family, homelessness, joblessness. And when you compound those factors together, we have opportunities, I guess, or situations where we have children who unfortunately develop low self-esteem, and they question their relationships. They're looking for adult guidance. They're looking for structure and stability. And when they don't find that in a home environment due to some of that chaos that can happen, they seek that out in other ways. And sometimes that can be through a violent, unfortunate relationship.
Gotten another tweet from a listener who is sort of affirming what Malia said, is that Indiana perpetrators not addressed before crime. Rape is an isolating crime for victims. And I guess if we could, in a little bit of time, Malia, if you can go back to that, what would have helped you? I mean, what would have encouraged you to come forward and share more of what was going on?
Sure. I think a big piece of that is I didn't know what happened to me was assault.
Mm-hmm.
All of the, you know, misconceptions that you hear about if you put yourself in that situation, what are you wearing?
What did I do to deserve
this? Right. What did I do to deserve this? Well, I got in the backseat of the car and I changed my mind. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that I was allowed to change my mind. And the minute that I said no and he didn't listen, that was rape.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this was 18 years ago. There wasn't a lot of prevention in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And still today, it's difficult to get into the schools and to teach these types of prevention about acquaintance assault.
How long did it take you to come to some kind of terms with it. I mean, you strike me as remarkably self-possessed right now. So,
I didn't really start my healing journey until 16 years later. So 2 years ago is when I came forward and started a therapy. I went back to school for my master's degree, specializing in working with survivors of sexual assault, and have kind of been on this crusade to bring awareness to the issue.
We are talking about teen sexual assault here on No Limits. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can find our other contact information online. My guests are State Representative Christina Hale, CEO Anita Carpenter of the Indiana Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and Malia Crosby, who is a victim who now counsels victims. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today on No Limits about teen sexual assault. Given the fact that Indiana has the second highest rate in the nation, it's a subject that needs to be addressed. My guests are State Representative Christina Hale. She's a Democrat from Indianapolis. Anita Carpenter, who is the CEO of the Indiana Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And Malia Crosby, a victim who now counsels victims. Getting a tweet from a listener, and if you'd like to send us a tweet or connect with us via Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. It says, check if Wyoming has the same restrictions on comprehensive sex and health education as Indiana. Low information makes for easy victimization. Should explain in context that Wyoming is the only state in the union, for those of you who might not have been listening at the top of the show, only state in the union that has a higher rate than Indiana. Anita, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, I have to say I don't know the answer to that. I know that there are not many states that have strong, comprehensive sexuality and health sex education programs in their schools, but honestly, I don't know about Wyoming specifically. So, but I do think that is a big contributing factor.
Well, let me turn that question around. What are the states that have the lowest rates?
Oh, gosh, I have to think. We've got, who has low rates? I want to say Pennsylvania, California. Illinois is not that high either. So some of our more progressive states with their legislation, I know, and with their funding to be able to address these issues have the lower rates. But
what sort of legislation would we be talking about, though? I guess that's where I was going, is if we know there are some places that seem to have solved this problem, are we looking at them possibly for best practices? Christina?
I think we absolutely will. But once again, this is a big problem, and I think it's a misnomer to even call it a problem. There are a lot of problems out there. One issue that we haven't even begun to address, and no state has to do with the fact that so many of our children today have smartphones, meaning they go to bed at night and have a piece of equipment in their room that can be used for blackmail. It can be used for adults to gain access to your child in ways that are not appropriate and not healthy, and for children themselves to be actors in sexual behavior that is in a way that has been unprecedented or impossible before. There are a lot of contributing factors here, and we just need to get our arms around it.
And Malia, I'm going to come back because you are the story to tell here. Did you ever confront your attacker? Or, I mean, what was the interaction? Was there any interaction afterwards? You know, what happened?
I saw him one or two times. He was a year behind me in high school, so luckily we had a whole different set of friends. He did end up dating my cousin at one point, which again confirmed all of my victim blaming. because she didn't quite believe me. You know, it was no big deal either. I did not have any contact with him. I've looked him up on Facebook. Luckily, I don't know what my purpose would have been. Maybe just to say, you know, you did this and this is how it's affected me. And I just wanted you to know. But I don't know as though that's necessary for my healing process either.
Is that an important, and I'm asking this question out of ignorance. I mean, to some degree, Anita was talking about, you know, dealing with the perpetrators of these attacks or assaults. I mean, is it possible, I want to be careful how I frame this question here because I want it to be fair and all of that. But at some level, doesn't there have to be a conversation or at least some way of saying to this young man, you know, what you did here was wrong. Mm-hmm. And if we don't start attacking it from that side as well, we're not likely to be able to solve any of the series of problems that Christina was speaking to. Anita, you're nodding your head in agreement, so
sure.
I'll go to you.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, you hit the nail on the head there because we've got issues with perpetrators out there who are not being held accountable in multiple ways for their acts of sexual violence. One, it's just starting the dialogue even at a very young age about what healthy relationships and healthy sexuality and consent is all about and making sure that we're having those dialogues so that's really clear. You know, there's a study from the University of Washington that we refer to a lot where they interviewed 7th and 8th graders, and 43% of those boys and 40% of those girls all said that there was an expectation of some sort of sexual gratification if money was spent on a date. So that's the mindset of these young people in a large population that we have to change in order to change the tide and shift the paradigm so that we're getting consent and having healthy relationships. And that's huge. And then when it gets on the perpetrator side, holding those perpetrators strongly accountable in Indiana is a big piece of it as well.
Christina.
I just wanted to return to your question, too, about what other states are doing. No states are really doing particularly well. And if we look to our military, mm-hmm. we know that there's a problem with rape in our military. We know college campuses have very significant problems with rape and sexual assault as well. This is a pervasive problem in our culture now. Indiana has the opportunity to take a lead, to begin to take a studied and effective approach to doing something about this problem. And I'd also like to challenge a comment you just made talking about the man being the perpetrator. I don't want us to forget that mm-hmm. this is about children, and nobody has good data on how many young boys have been raped or sexually assaulted. We certainly don't have that data in Indiana either. And mm-hmm. that is a very extremely underreported crime as well. I keep coming back to the issue that this is such a big problem. The perpetrators are from all walks of life. They're men, they're women. If we just look at some of the data that we capture from the judicial system and courts, we can see the news. We can see that this is a crime that's happening, repeating throughout our state. And it's a very eclectic mix of people who are the perpetrators. So we're going to have to be very sophisticated about what we do and act urgently to make sure that something gets done.
Well, and I guess, and it probably was a lazy assumption on my part to go with the male, although the numbers indicate, you know, 17.3% of women up to the age of 18 report being raped or sexually assaulted, and the number is just slightly over 4 for young boys and men. And I realize, obviously, that 4% is probably not accurate because there's a tremendous amount of underreporting. I would also guess, though, that 17.3% is underreported as well, that the real problem is much larger than that. And I guess where I would go, if anyone would like to join this conversation, you can do so by connecting with us via email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. But there is a, you know, where I want to go with this is some of it is the mythology really of what courtship and all of that, that, you know, that there's a pursuer and a pursued rather than, you know, two people approaching each other as equal partners. Is that part of the whole sense of seduction and all of that? Is that part of, you know, the cultural pattern that we have to, if not break, at least address, Anita?
Well, I think there are some factors there, and I absolutely appreciate what Representative Hale said because, yes, there are certainly female sex predators, and that's a pervasive population against our young boys. So it's something that we have to be very vigilant about as well. And I think that when we talk about acquaintance situations and teen dating violence, we are talking about the scenario that I typically see is a relationship situation, and then it escalates into a violent situation and or abuse of, you know, that control that mm-hmm. somebody takes over another person. So
we've gotten a comment really from a listener named Robert via Facebook. Says one thing that isn't taught enough today is men and boys personal responsibility and self-respect, that by committing that desperate theft, it lowers the ability to respect that face in the mirror. This leads down a road of continued lies every time you try to tell yourself you're any good. We should be teaching boys to treat themselves better by treating others with sexual respect. Malia, you're nodding your head.
Wow, I think that's a really powerful statement. Again, like I said, kind of going back to your comment a little bit ago about had I have come, you know, confronted my, you know, rapist, I think it would have done nothing for me. But for him, I think it would have been a valuable piece to, this is what you did. This is how it's affected me. He probably doesn't even realize that the effect that it's had on me. And mm-hmm. so many times I would imagine that perpetrators don't realize the harm that they've caused. And so I think that accountability piece needs to be there.
Well, and I guess where I'm going is even in films, you look at, you know, the mythology or whatever is that the male pursues, you know, the female and almost as if she is a prize to be won rather than an individual. And that there's it's like it's almost a contest here so that. You know, that there is this assumption that some resistance is expected and is something to be overcome rather than honored. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten also a tweet from a listener named Janet who says, overwhelmed by the number of young women in my 26-year teaching career who experience sex assault. We must call out and speak against rape culture. What does she mean by rape culture, Christina?
Well, as I described earlier, we have these terrible issues within our United States military, on college campuses, certainly among high school girls here in Indiana. But I'd like to return to something, too, that Anita was talking about regarding perpetrators and understanding the problem here in Indiana a little bit better. And that is that when we do study this problem, this isn't just a study of victimology. It has to be a study of the life world in schools, in families. We need to understand more what are those motivating factors. Does it harken back to the mythology you're talking about? Does it have something to do with how hypersexualized society is? Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, Miley Cyrus wouldn't have been on television during prime time twerking.
Yeah.
Times are changing. And I also would like to remind people, you know, it's kind of scary to think about our children in their rooms at night with internet access,
that you
can't control, that you'll never know about. Anybody can access them, whether it's a criminal adult in Tennessee reaching through Facebook to find your child, or is it someone they go to school with? There's been a terrible problem with sexual blackmail and taking sexualized selfies and all kinds of things. And we are not prepared in terms of policy or law or expertise to help the kids of today. The kids of today, life's just different, and it's difficult, and we need to get going and be better positioned to help.
What changes would you recommend? And I'd like to say to our listeners, if you want to join the conversation, please call us at 1-866-476-3881. What changes would help address? And Representative Hale, I think, has made a good argument that this is not a problem but a series of problems that have kind of a cumulative effect. What changes would you recommend, Malia, in the way we address this subject?
Mm-hmm. I think prevention in high schools is a big piece of that, not only for women, but also men. Mm-hmm. Our high school boys, our junior high boys need to be more aware of the issue as well. And like Anita said, healthy sexuality, dating, what does it mean? What mm-hmm. is consent? And so that's a big piece of it, is reaching our young boys as well.
So a more aggressive educational component than we currently have.
I really think that that's a very big key piece to it. And, when I've talked before, it's not just a problem in just schools. It's in families. It's in social media, magazines, TVs. It's everywhere. And I think that that contributes to the rape culture that just says that it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess, and the reason I came back, I did not mean, by the way, to judge you in any way, but in regard to talking about your attacker. But as I listen to this, the scales are way out of balance here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you spent 18 years trying to come to terms with this, and at least from what I can tell from listening to you, your attacker has sort of spent those past 18 years not even aware of the damage he did.
Right.
And not having a moment of regret. How do we go about breaking that cycle and, letting him know, letting him, meaning collectively, or anyone who male or female, who's going to attempt to victimize someone that no is a two-letter word and it's relatively easy to understand. I'll start with you, Anita.
So first off, I think that we have to start very young. We have to start shifting that mindset and the social stigmas that surround sexual violence and the pervasive nature of it at a very young age. We need to start early childhood, early elementary, and we start talking about personal space and self-esteem and being in control of your own body and your own surroundings, empowering children. We need to start talking to parents about the grooming process that they even do with socialization. We have Listen to Me, which is our new curriculum for early childhood. And one of the big things we talk to parents about is that you don't realize it, but you groom your children at a very young age for opening them up to these kinds of circumstances. When I say, you need to go hug grandma or, Aunt May,
if they don't want to,
it may just be because, grandma smells funny. I don't know. But you need to empower children.
They just don't feel comfortable.
Right. And for whatever reason, we need to let children know that that's okay. Because when we groom them to say, okay, you got to go hug them. That's the right thing to do. That's socially acceptable. If I don't want to get on the elevator with somebody because I feel uncomfortable, I shouldn't get on the elevator. And so we need to stop doing those things. And when we start changing that tide, then we start shifting the mindsets around what's socially acceptable. That's a key piece to start.
We are talking about teen sexual assaults, the epidemic here in Indiana. My guests are Christina Hale, a state representative, Democrat from Indianapolis, Anita Carpenter, who is with the Indiana Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and Malia Crosby, a victim who now counsels victims. If you would like to join the conversation, please call us 1-866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI, and Facebook is nolimitsWFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about teen sexual assaults. Today on No Limits, Indiana has the second highest rate in the country at 17.3%. My guests are State Representative Christina Hale, who's a Democrat from Indianapolis, Anita Carpenter, who's the CEO of Indiana Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and Malia Crosby, a victim who now counsels victims. Susan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly.
I thought it was interesting what she was saying about the young men, that somehow confronting them was going to help them. It's not just high school. One in four or one in five freshman girls in college are raped, usually freshman year. That means there are an awful lot of men rapists. Their only way of dealing, of relating to women, is to rape them. And they're growing up to be our CEOs. You wonder why men can't have a meaningful relationship with a wife and children as they get older, and the marriages don't work. They've never figured out how to relate to women and to other people. So it helps them, too, if we can solve this problem. The other thing is, I don't think it's necessarily a new problem. I remember, now that I'm aware of this, I remember when I went to college, and I'm in my 60s, the girls that went off to college got homesick and came home. Mm. Now I realize those are girls that had been raped. Mm. Or many of them were. So it's a real problem.
Thank you very
much. Colleges cover it up, too.
Yeah. Thank
you. They have to, by federal law, report this, and they don't. Their student health cover it up and tell girls not to go home and tell their parents. Indiana State reports more than IU does, and you know that's not right.
Thank you very much for the call, Susan. We'll try to address your points now.
Well, thank you, Susan. I think that you make some really good points about engaging men, and that's part of the dialogue that's been going on here for the last 5 or 6 years across the nation, that this is no longer a women's issue, and it's been treated like that for a very long time. But we've got to engage men in this discussion. They've got to become part of the solution and a part of the discussion and part of the leaders in addressing sexual violence if we're going to reduce victimization and perpetration. I absolutely agree with you that we have a significant problem on our college campuses. You know, it's that age range of 16 to 24 that's in the highest risk bracket for victimization. So they're doing some things with the Clery Act and the SAVE Act. I think that we will see some changes that are coming down from the federal government on our college campuses to help try to address this. But by speaking out, by talking more about it, I think we start the dialogue really well about getting people to feel comfortable about doing something and getting engaged.
We've gotten a couple of tweets that operate off of the same theme. Makes reference that Indiana teaches abstinence-only sexuality, that 25 other states, you know, have rejected it, the abstinence-only funds. What relationship does that have to this series of problems? Is the fact that, you know, we stop the discussion before it really starts? Malia, you're shaking your head most emphatically, so I'm going to go with you.
Yeah, I have a 12-year-old in middle school, and they teach abstinence only, and it's out of fear. You know, if you do this, you know, if you have sex or if you cross this line, you're going to have self-esteem. Your parents will hate you. You'll drop out of school. So it's all by fear. And I don't think that that's the message that we need to send to kids. They need to know that this is an issue, reaching our boys and our girls for prevention. It's such a huge problem. I just think that sometimes schools are going about it in the wrong way, and I've tried to get into high schools and have just been met with a closed door.
Well, it's something that people obviously are uncomfortable talking about, which is part of the reason we're having this conversation, is to try to force discussion of an important issue. We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Carolyn who says, "Don't forget that alcohol is a big contributor to rape, makes consent hard to give." Anita, you're shaking your head.
Well, you know, I think it's very prevalent on college campuses, but we should in no way allow drugs or alcohol to be the reason that sexual violence is a problem. It's a tool in the toolkit of a perpetrator to take advantage and take control over a victim. And so, yes, it's got to be part of the conversation, but it doesn't stop somebody who's going to commit an act of sexual violence from doing that act of sexual violence regardless of alcohol.
Gotten a tweet from a listener says, "My first encounters at age 17 were out of fear. Abuser says, afraid to, didn't know how to say no." And that's probably something that we some piece of this discussion we ought to emphasize here is, how should someone go about saying no and making that clear? Malia, I'll start with you.
I'm finding this one a little tough to answer because I did say no.
I know.
And it didn't get me anywhere to the point where I was screaming no. So I think it's really, I'm going to put this on the perpetrator's side, that they have to know that when it's said, that that's what it means. Because I think girls are saying it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, survivors are saying it, but perpetrators aren't listening. And I think that that's the key, is perpetrators aren't listening.
Yeah.
Anita?
I just add to it that, you know, the goal would be is that we get the consent and the mutual agreement for the relationship to go to that level before the person ever has to say no, because it's just tragic, and it's overwhelming and overpowering to be in that situation, and we get that fight or flight response, and sometimes the response that we give is to freeze up and to be silent, and that in no way condones the act of sexual violence from happening, but that's the response. And mm-hmm. so we want to stop that before it gets to that point.
And we've gotten also a tweet that that asks why Indiana doesn't have a line item budget for sexual assault. Christina is the elected official on the panel here. I'll throw that one in your direction.
Well, we have a very large budget, and different state agencies, from the Division of from DCS to the Department of Health. There's a commission on women. A lot of people have a little piece of the problem, but there isn't a line item per se for victims or for prevention, or there are a lot of little pieces. And what we want to do is create more of an emphasis area and be more intentional about our approach as a state.
Well, and you have to, part of your bill obviously is attempting to gauge the scope of what you've got, to the challenges you have to confront.
Exactly.
But it sounds like you're also saying between the lines that having a line item wouldn't be a bad idea.
I think it would be a grand idea, actually. And I did also want to just get back to a point that Malia made. And she is a hero.
Mm-hmm.
She went through this.
Mm-hmm.
She is now an advocate for others. She's a counselor to others. And she's telling her story. But that was a process. It didn't happen overnight. But I've never met a stronger person. I'm so proud of her for all that she's doing to bring attention to this issue in our state. I look up to her a great deal. And, you know, she was making some points earlier about your question regarding abstinence, too. And I just wanted to clarify, that's a good point about the teaching of abstinence in our schools. But we also want to be very careful not to confuse sexuality with violence.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're talking about is a violent act. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why don't they say no? Guilt, shame, fear, confusion. When you're in that situation, you didn't plan to be there. You didn't know it was going mm-hmm. to happen. And you're going on instinct. So education absolutely plays a role in helping girls understand what they need to do to get out of a bad situation plays a role. But sometimes violence is just brute violence, and there's not much you can do
Many years ago, around the time of the Tyson trial here in Indianapolis, I did a newspaper series on the issue of rape. And I remember talking with a prosecutor at the time who argued that addressing this problem might be easier if we took, stopped considering it as a sex crime and just said, it's a crime, call it an assault, get the sex piece out of this altogether, just say it's an assault. You know, we don't assume that anyone can give consent outside of a boxing ring to be hit or anything like that, you know, anything that's that damaging or degrading. What do you think of that approach, Anita?
Well, you know, it's an interesting concept because I think that the sex piece of it does get in the way. When we talk to juries after, after trials have concluded, the thing that they talk about is that to them, it is just a sexual act and that there was a mistake made because it's usually between two people who know each other. And such a misguided perception around the violence, because this is the most intimately violent crime that anybody can ever endure. And I think that's an interesting concept. I hadn't really thought about it. Yeah, something to consider.
We are talking about teen sex assaults here on No Limits. Che, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. Did I pronounce your name correctly? Or?
Yes, sir, you did.
Good.
And my point is, the law is too lenient against the rapists and people that do that. Sexual assault. But in my opinion, they should have no rights. They do not deserve the air they breathe. I know of a case, a six-year-old girl was sexually assaulted by her grandfather. Luckily, she was smart, slapped her head, his hand, and ran away screaming. A year and a half later, a district attorney didn't know, done nothing about it because they didn't have physical proof. A year and a half later, he attempted to rape his daughter-in-law, and that guy is still free. In my opinion, the law should be more strict against that kind of people.
Thank you very much.
It's not the problem, kids. It's not the problem, parents. The law is the problem.
Thank you very much for the call. Well, are we too lenient? Are the penalties, and I guess the other part of that I think was an implied thing, is, I mean, once this sort of behavior takes root, is it something that can be altered or reformed in any way? Anita?
Well, I'm going to tell you that's a point that's up for a lot of discussion on whether sex offenders can be rehabilitated. And I think that some can when it's situational sexual violence and they need that education to know that they crossed that line. I think there's an opportunity there. But you've got sexually violent predators out there that I don't believe, and I don't think the data supports that they can be rehabilitated. We consider them much like alcoholics, that once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, they just have to learn their triggers and avoid those triggers. And they can be, they can have therapy to learn those triggers and avoid those if it's something that they want to change. I think that our laws, when we look at our laws, we have good laws on the books. You know, if someone's convicted of rape, it's a 15 to 20 year sentence. I think part of the problem that we have is that we don't, a lot of sex crimes don't end in a sex crimes conviction. They're pled down, they're pled out, or due to lack of evidence, they're not prosecuted. A lot of cases don't even make it to trial. So that's a problem.
Of the cases that have been reported.
Mm-hmm.
And when I just want to underscore a big part of our problem is that so many of these cases are underreported by boys and by girls as well.
Yeah, the numbers we talked about, the 17.3% and the 4%, we have to assume are much lower than the real incidents. This is, you know, obviously this is a disturbing subject. I mean, we're talking about Malia here and you know, her long, long battle to come back from this. And Representative Hale, I think, said what we all feel, that you are a truly admirable figure for that. But I guess where I would like to go is, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but when I hear you, Malia, 18 years, you're still living with this. What was, you know, an incident that took, you know, in time, took place in a relatively short period, you're still dealing with this. So what I'd like to leave us with, some hope here, what are some practical steps we could take right now as a state, as a community who cares about our young people, to make stories like yours a lot less common than they are? I'll start with you.
I'm going to keep going back to prevention. I think that that's a big piece of it. And just really, you know, my role as a therapist is to, and an advocate, is to get the word out there with my own story so that others will come forward. I think that that helps us to get a bigger grasp on the issue, but as well as makes it, we can't avoid the topic. Let's throw it in people's faces so that we have to deal with it.
How do people react when you tell them your story?
I get mixed emotions. A lot of people are very supportive now. It's not something that I hide. It's part of who I am. Mm-hmm. It's part of why I'm here today. And if I had to have had the experience, I'm grateful that it's helped shape me into the person that I am today.
I must be losing my touch as an interviewer here, because I should have asked this. Who was the first person you shared your story with, and what was that like?
My story in its entirety,
yeah,
was my therapist 2 years ago. That was the first time that I felt safe enough to tell my story in its entirety. It was a long road. Very long.
Sounds like it. Anita, I'm sorry, I got diverted by Malia's story here. You've got maybe 15, 20 seconds to give us a concrete step we could do to make this less common.
Sure. I have to agree with what Malia is saying. I mean, prevention is key. We've got to address those root causes of violence. We've got to start the dialogue across that social ecological model so that we're looking at individuals, relationships, communities, society, policy, and we've just got to keep talking about it.
Representative Christina Hale, you get the last word. I imagine some of that's going to be involved in supporting the bill you've got working through the process.
Exactly. Please help me get this bill passed. Please talk to your state legislators and other leaders in your community to let them know how important you feel this issue is. We need to do a better job of protecting our state's children, and understanding the problem is step number one.
That will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Christina Hale, Anita Carpenter, and Malia Crosby. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.